is indicative of something more frightening, because I believe when governments decide to silence voices in opposition to the stance that they are taking.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jojage in the Ganyagaha language and Muniang in Anishinaabe Moen, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah Day, live in studio on Thursday, January 18th. 2023. I'm joined by Xander Chung, who is going to be interviewing one of our guests a little later on tonight. I have an announcement about some major funding for a big theater in the city, and I'm going to tell you about the guests ahead of us tonight. Jordy Theater is presenting two shows for young audiences during Jordy Fest next weekend. We will speak to the three young intrepid performers bringing Perfect Storm and Instant to life. Then a forgotten old friend's message delivered to you virtually in an intimate show from Rumble Theater called Good Things to Do. Imago Theater is presenting this weekend's at-home screenings. We will speak with Krista Jackson, who is executive and artistic director, to find out Good Things to Do, how it happens. And also, Centaur's Wildside Festival opens officially tonight, with shows and various events all on the wild side from here to February the 8th. We will meet the new theater company that will be presenting a free staged reading on Sunday afternoon. It's called Plays for the End of the World, and it's being described as a visceral journey into the world of loneliness. The director, Chelsea Davhilke, will join us. You can follow us for updates, images of our guests, and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. In particular, I love the visual art for all of the shows we're going to talk about tonight. So on our grid, you can see some of the images that give you a taste, a soupçon of what's to come at these performances this weekend and next. Speaking of Centaur Theater, by the way, it was a busy day for the team there, not just because Wildside is launching tonight with new play Still Life, but also the theater announced new funding from the province and country to the tune of something like $4.4 million. That's very exciting news for Centaur and the artistic scene here in Montreal, eager to see what they do with that cash. So you're listening to Upstage, all those conversations and more ahead. We are going to start first with Jordy Theatre, which presents premier family and family-friendly content for children and young teens and adults here in this city. And every January, they put on a couple of shows. It's a way of kind of spreading the word, but also getting some funding for their touring session. I am going to be bringing in three very talented actors who are going to be performing in a couple of days from now. And because there's three of you, I want to make sure they're all there first before we begin. Meenu Atwal joins us. Hello, Meenu.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. Masha Bashmakova, are you present? Hello, Masha.
I am. Hello.
And finally, just making sure Sebastian Quint's on the line. Hello, Sebastian.
Hello.
Okay, great. This is so exciting. Kaylee over at Jordy said, I've got three great performers. Do you want them all on? And I was like, we can try. I am not a technical whiz, but I've plugged you guys all in. Thank you so much for being here. So I'm going to direct a lot of the questions. I know you guys all have ties to Montreal, spending a lot of time working here. Being at Jordy is a really cool opportunity for performers because you get to go on these touring shows. You are in the middle of the season. Can I ask you, Meenu, what it's been like so far to be part of the 23-24 season?
Oh, it's been so, so lovely. I think we got to meet some amazing people throughout our journey, and just sharing the stories with the kids has been so special.
Yeah, they're a fun kind of audience to be with. Masha, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a blast. We go all the way from local Montreal shows and all the way up north, and getting to see kids that barely get access to theater, and it's pretty special, and getting to see them after the shows and answer questions. It's all very, very exciting.
Sebastian, you're halfway through the season. Has it been what you expected?
Oh, my God. Well, certainly it has been quite the experience, honestly. The traveling, the reaction from the kids. I mean, and it's also my first, like, big gig in theater. So, because Minu and I just graduated, So, it's been really fun.
So you're halfway through the season, and that means halfway through the two-play tour, so you still have some more travel ahead, but you will be anchored in Montreal for the next little while. We've got two shows coming up, the 26th to the 28th at Maison Théâtre, so that is right in the heart of the Latin Quarter. And Perfect Storm is the show for younger audiences. It's for kids 7 and up, and it's written by a playwright well-known to Geordie audiences. Minu, can I ask you to tell us more about Perfect Storm?
Yes, Perfect Storm is about these two girls. They're both 10, and their teacher, Mr. B, learning how to deal with like these big emotions, and it's done through the use of like looking at the emotions through like the sun, the cloud, and rainbows, and it's lovely. It's I think everyone could really enjoy that show.
Yeah, tell me about the storm metaphor and how, like, I'm assuming this is a metaphor that lands pretty easily for kids, but yeah. Can you tell us more about the play and how, because I'm thinking of the imagery of these two kids under an umbrella and it's raining. Mm-hmm. Delve into that for me.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So it's they're really learning how to deal with their big emotions and how you need to learn how to balance both, because the sun can't exist without the cloud and the cloud can't exist without the sun. So they need to work together to, you know, create the rainbow, and they need each other. The sun and the clouds, they need each other.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's it. Like, that's why like the cloud is so important for them. And yeah, it's learning how to embrace it and not fight it all the time.
Now, Max and Kelsey are the two best friends at the heart of this, and they both kind of fit mm-hmm. into certain types, I guess we could say. So I wanted to ask Masha which of the characters you are and which type you are.
So I'm playing Max, otherwise known as Perfect Girl. She is very type A, very perfectionistic, and has always been used to things coming easily to her. At school and being top of the class and putting in the hard work to be top of the class. And when faced with something like a drama class, which isn't as linear perhaps as her other subjects, she starts unpacking her own anxiety that comes out of that and finding ways to strive for collaboration as opposed to perfectionism and competition.
We may not think of perfectionism as being a trait that we find in kids necessarily, because we think of kids as being messy and a little wild, but I think that does come through at that age, and I think mm-hmm. there's probably a lot of kids in the audience who gets it. Maybe some that won't, but that's okay. Minu, so Masha's playing Max. Minu, you're playing Kelsey, and she's known as Perfect Girl's best friend. What does that mean?
Perfect Girl's best friend is just constantly trying to be seen and, you know, She wants to be heard, you know, like she's trying her best too, and she's okay with where she is. But like at some point, like you want to be more too, you know, like you want to be more than just this person's best friend.
And Sebastian,
so that's what Kelsey is.
And Sebastian's also on the line. And a very funny role that you have is that you're a teacher whose dreams haven't panned out the way he expected them to go. So tell us about your role as the drama teacher.
Oh, my God. Mr. B, he's quite the role to play. I mean, he's just an absolute diva himself. He just really wants to achieve this huge dream that he has by being a teacher. So, you know, he's not letting anything stop him. And obviously that playing that huge dream in such like a, as you could say, like a, such a common setting is really fun. It's really, really fun to play.
That is the voice of Sebastian Quint, along with Masha Bashmakova and Minu Atwal, and they are the three performers of the Jordy Two-Play Tour. They are mid-season, and they are now anchored in Montreal, getting ready for Jordy Theatre Fest, not this weekend, the one after at Maison Théâtre. So we were just talking about Perfect Storm. That's written by Julian Clarke, whose work has been performed by Jordy previously. Jimmy Blay, who is the AD, is directing this piece, and it's for kids 7 and up. And then on the older side, something a little more... I don't want to use the word sexy. Something a little more edgy is Instant, written by Governor General award-winning playwright Aaron Shields, who has connections to Montreal. This play is called Instant. It's a little bit more of a grown-up story because it's quite fast-paced. Sebastian, tell me about the three teens we meet here.
Yes. So in this story, we really get to meet Meredith, Rosie, and Jay. And each one of them obviously has this big dream. Obviously, the play's name, Instant, says a lot about instant dreams, instant living in the moment, and really being impatient. You know that, like, that's something that we manage a lot in this society, a lot of digital literacy and online identity, mental health. It has all of that in the story.
And what role do you play, Sebastian?
I play the role of Jay, the hockey player. He has quite the family situation going on, and he also has this huge dream of making it to the NBA and to become a part of the team of the Habs. So yeah.
Okay, so that is your role. You're playing the aspiring hockey player, Masha. Tell me more about the teenager that you portray.
So I play Meredith, or Mare, who. Big dream is to be a pop star, to be a musician. And she's coming from a background of parents who work in politics and in business and who frankly don't have a lot of time left for their kids. And she's breaking out of this mold of expectations and has found music to be her way out and her way to both stardom but also to being seen. And she's a big jokester, a big prankster. She, like, looks to Jay for the playfulness and the comfort that I think she doesn't find in a lot of other people. But she is coming from a family of a lot of privilege and seeing how that lands with students and friends and classmates that maybe don't come from similar backgrounds. And she's on the verge of making some pretty dangerous choices in the play.
Your challenge as a performer, I'm sure, is to convey, you know, that she's privileged, but that doesn't mean that you don't have problems that are just going to spur your character forward. Minu, that leaves Rosie. Rosie has a more, I guess, simpler interest. Her interests are kind of focused less on the outer world, but more on the inner world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rosie's learning how to, she has a lot to deal with at home as well, like the two other characters too. And her goal is just to, also, like, kind of like going, kind of like Kelsey, she's trying to be seen and to, like, make a difference and help out her family as much as she could with what she's given. And she faces some very intense challenges. And yeah, that's Rosie.
Now, I know we don't want to pick favorites, but I just can't help mm-hmm. that, you know, that these are two shows and it's three roles in each. Can you pick a favorite character that you like to inhabit? No one's feelings will be hurt here. Which role do you really relish playing out of the two shows, Instant and Perfect Storm?
Oh, they're both so different. It's such a hard choice to make. but I think both plays have, like, very different energies. And the show for the younger kids is, like, much more... like, you could even say, like, it's more childish, if that's the right word. It's just, you get to play a lot with the set, with each other, with the costumes. But I think Instant has, like, a whole different energy where, like, you get to feel as an actor a lot, you know? So they're both fun to play, I think, for myself at least. I don't know about the others, but I enjoy playing both a lot.
Great diplomatic answer. Masha, do you have a preferred role?
It really depends on the day. So Mare is very playful, very energetic, but the entire play is a lot more, they're both pretty text heavy,
yeah.
But
the older play really deals with a lot of text-based storytelling, right? And a lot of physical movement too, but it's very fast. And in terms of playing the emotional scope of the character, it can be quite intense. So some days that's where I'm drawn to. And then, of course, the love for the physicality of the young play is, like for the play for the younger kids, I mean, is also very exciting. So truly depends on the day for me, and I love them both deeply.
And that's kind of...
And in ways, they're quite similar as well.
And so that's kind of... Fun. The beautiful challenge of being on a project like this is that you're balancing these two shows. I mean, they're not long, you know, three-act pieces, but you get to delve and dip into these two different storylines and characters in very quick fashion. Sebastian, you had a lot of enthusiasm for Mr. B and Perfect Storm, and I'm wondering if you have a preference.
Well, no, I mean, I really do love both shows because, again, like Mina said, they really bring such a different energy. Instant being more, I guess you could think about it as like more teenagey, more kind of like TV-like, I would say. That's how I would feel. And Perfect Storm is a lot more clowny and a lot more comedy-like. And obviously, I know Masha used this analogy a long time ago, but it's like you kind of have to just amp it up or amp it down from like what you have within yourself. So I guess one represents more my calmness. The other one represents more my extroverted, flamboyant mm-hmm. side. So it's really interesting. I'm going to be diplomatic like Minu and say both are great in their own way.
Another great advantage to the roles that you're in, learning to be diplomatic. Now, I wanted very quickly to touch on Instant before I leave you guys, because it talks about being online, social media, making choices that will impact your future, even though you may not realize it in the moment. All three of you are young performers and kind of making your way in the world. Did Aaron's writing about social media and digital life, did it ring true to you? Did you find this relatable? I'm not sure who might want to tackle that question. Sebastian?
Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah, absolutely. I think that it's such an important message. Every time that we go to a school or every time we present a show to people, they really feel impacted because it's something that we still see nowadays. Superficial aspect to social media that I have to get the best views. I have to get the most likes. I have to look the best. That competition that comes with the use of social media, that's one of the subjects that really is present in the play. And I feel like it's so important for people to be even more aware of that and be even more aware of the repercussions that it has on people, on the psychology of people, even physically, being more aware of everything that you do and feeling watched constantly. It's really not a pleasant feeling. And it's great that we're spreading this message everywhere. And yeah, it's really important.
Minu, Masha, any last thoughts very quickly on that?
I'm getting status updates now of Facebook of like throwbacks from 10 years ago. memories of like posting absolutely random things. Like, does anyone remember the homework? Or I had such a great day and it's such a fun throwback when doing this show and kind of thinking about this constant being available to the world, you know? And I think as performers and actors, we get to be in the public eye in the way that now with social media, just about everybody is, right? So thinking about the instant repercussions of things that you might say on the internet or might do that have right. these long-lasting effects or colors of your character, you know?
Very well said. Minu?
Yeah, I think Seb and Masha really said it well, but like I agree with them too. It's just like I remember reading this play and just thinking how like, well, it was shown how your actions affect other people too. And I think having it in such an instant manner throughout like the phones and everything, social media and stuff, I think the message is like really well received, and I'm very thankful for that too, you know, because it's a beautiful message in this play.
Very well said, all three of you. Thank you all so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on Upstage tonight. We'll be watching. Really appreciate you guys taking the time and wishing you all the best for the rest of the two-play tour, as well as Geordie Fest.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Of course. That was the voices of Minu Atwal, Masha Bashmakova, and Sebastian Quint. They are going to be playing the roles in Perfect Storm and Instant. So Perfect Storm, January 27th at 1 p.m. and January 28th at 1 p.m. So those are the afternoon shows. Those are for audiences 7 and up. And then for Instant, it will be performed on Friday, January 26th and then January 27th at 7 p.m. If you would like more information, head to geordietheatre.ca. Tickets are $17.25 for 18 and younger and $23 for adults. You can also head to Maison Théâtre Box Office at tuxedobillet.com. So if you head to Tuxedo Billet and then look up Maison Théâtre, that should point you to the right spot. And as I said, geordie.ca for more information about scheduling. They also offer workshops before Perfect Storm so kids can play some games and learn more about the theatrical process, which is a really funny thing. So Geordie Fest happening January 26th until the 28th at Maison Théâtre on Ontario East, that is in the Latin Quarter. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. My name is Sarah Day. I'm joined here with Xander Chung. And still to come on the show, we will take you to the Wildside Festival launching tonight at Centaur. We'll learn more about a budding new theater company getting a free stage reading on Sunday afternoon. Their provocative title is Plays for the End of the World. But next, I want to learn more about Rumble Theater's Good Things to Do. It'll only take 45 minutes of your time. You just have to be at home, and you get a very interesting play that comes in the form of a forgotten old friend's message. I'll have that for you in just a matter of moments. Stay tuned.
It sounds just like a song. I want your belly and that summer feeling. I don't know if I could ever go without watermelon sugar.
GemArt Center is pleased to present When Big Man Talk, the exhibit. Come experience a captivating fusion of paintings, photography, an immersive virtual reality experience and more. To kick off the exhibit, GemArt is presenting the film African Redemption, the life and legacy of Marcus Garvey, screening January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Maison de la Culture Côte des Neiges. Then experience When Big Man Talk, the exhibit, from February 3 to 10 at Galerie Lucie Michel, and after that from February 11 to 14 at the UNIA. For tickets, call 438-507-9258 or head to jam-montreal.com and click Jam Arts Center.
Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. Still to come on the show, we're going to have a preview of one of the events at Wildside Festival, which launches tonight at Centaur Theater. But next, we are going to take you, to nowhere in particular, your living room, your bedroom, your bathroom, even if you'd like. All we need is 45 minutes of your time, unbroken, strong internet connection, and you too can enjoy Good Things to Do. It's a presentation by Rumble Theater. It comes in the format of a Forgotten Old Friends message delivered to you, of course, virtually. A 45-minute show you can take in at home January 20th and the 21st. Showings at 1, 2:45, 6, and 7:45. I believe the 20th is sold out, so don't sit on this one. Get to it as soon as you can. It is, as I mentioned, by Rumble Theater, but being presented by Imago Theater. I am joined by the Artistic and Executive Director at Imago, Krista Jackson. Welcome back to Upstage, Krista.
Thanks, Sarah. So great to be here again.
Oh, great to have you back. When I saw this show on the website, I was instantly intrigued because virtual shows became a part of life during the early days of the pandemic. And I thought to myself, a lot of it wasn't that great. It was hard to kind of watch or do, but some of it was really innovative, really interesting things. And I was kind of curious to see if other theaters were going to stick with it. One particular was a show where someone called you and the actor spoke to you for 45, 30 minutes or so and altered the script based on your reactions. So there's a lot of room here for imagination and creativity. I'll stop talking now. Krista, tell me about how it works without giving away too much for the audience. How does Good Things to Do operate?
Well, I'll just start by saying that Christine Quintana and I had a Zoom call, and when she told me about this show, I was really intrigued because she's from Rumble Theater and one of the creators and the writer, and she told me about how it worked, and I had done during the pandemic a phone call show where there was a computer prompting two people that were connected on the phone call. And I felt so connected to this person afterwards. I had no idea. I think they lived in the United States. I had no idea who they were. But I was really intrigued by Good Things to Do when she was telling me about it. And she set up a show for myself and the Imago team to do. So basically what you do is you give your email, you buy your ticket, which is only $15, so super affordable. And you give your email, and then you get an email text to say, are you ready? And you sort of log into it, and then you sit down at your computer. You can be under your covers, you can be wherever you want. You're supposed to get cozy. And then the show starts on the computer, and you sort of feel like you're on your own. There's like, it's taking you sort of through a story, and you're connected to the person on the other end doing the story and taking you through with sound. And there's prompts to, do things on your keyboard. And then by the end of it, you realize that there's many others in there with you. There's 12, up to 12 per show. And the way the play is constructed is that you feel so incredibly connected to the other folks on the show that, like, it's almost like you're in a live space with them. And we all came off of it. We were texting each other, like, kind of, like, crying. We were just, like, so moved by it and felt so held and so it was just like a little sort of tall drink of water in the desert at the time we did it. And I just thought it would be beautiful to just offer the show in January when it's a little bit cold out, when, it's just, we're coming off of the holidays and we're, the light's coming back a little bit. And yeah, so we are presenting it, which has been amazing. And we're hoping to get more folks out on Sunday for those other four shows.
It just sounds like a very, very interesting concept. Rumble Theater is based out in Vancouver. How did you come to connect with this company in particular? You just mentioned Christine Quintana, one of the creators.
Christine and I had a lot of folks in common in the communities across Canada, and we were sort of told by lots of people, oh, you should be Krista, you should be Christine. So we finally did that. And the other way I know Christine is she created with Dean Paul Gibson, who's out at Bard on the Beach, a leadership pledge, which is like a series of questions that you can ask yourself as a leader in theater, and answer. And I did that pledge, actually. And when I started at Imago, I did that leadership pledge and shared it with the team as like a starting point of sort of the ethos that we were going to create together. So we had that kind of connection of, I reached out to her to say, I did your pledge, and it really launched us off as a company really beautifully. So sort of felt like we were just in the sort of same kind of space, making theater at Imago and at Rumble. She's an incredible creator. Yeah.
A kindred spirit company of sorts. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Oh, you're speaking with Krista Jackson, who's executive and artistic director of Imago Theater, and they're hosting a production this weekend called Good Things to Do. As we mentioned, it's virtual. It's 45 minutes and you're at home for the experience. And I'm assuming also, Krista, that this makes working with a Vancouver company that much easier because is this show being, it's operating out of Vancouver for a Montreal audience?
It is. Okay. There is an artist out in Vancouver on Vancouver time, doing all of the work behind the scenes to present it to us. And I mean, it can be done anywhere as long as you do it on Eastern Standard Time. Okay. So you can be anywhere in the country and do it.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny you just mentioned that, you know, it can be hard to get ourselves out the door in January, especially when it's very cold or there's a lot of snow on the ground. This kind of works in Vancouver's favor because they just got over 30 centimeters of snow, which they are not really geared for. My friend is a teacher and has had her first snow day in like forever. So they're still digging out, but the people involved in the performance this weekend don't have to go anywhere. This is, as far as I know, I won't assume. So we've touched on the technical part of things and what you can expect at home and just how magical it is. But can we get a little hint of the story itself? What really hit me was understanding this is like a message that you're hearing from someone that you haven't heard from in a long time.
Yeah. And it's really hard because it's really hard to kind of get into the story because the way it's constructed, it takes you on this journey. So I kind of don't want to give too much away. I think you need to just experience it. But it starts with a dream.
Okay.
It starts with a dream.
And can I ask also just about the audio a little bit? Because it's being described as a dreamy sonic landscape, which sounds lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of sound and like soundscape and water in it, and music as well. There's some beautiful like compositions in it. So it takes you sort of where you need to go along with the text that you're reading, and then participating in. It becomes quite participatory as it goes on as well.
Very cool.
But you really, it's beautiful. You started as an individual and you end as a group in a really beautiful way.
So there's only 12 tickets per show. You've sold out for all of Saturday, and then Sunday there's four more showings. Do you think you would do this again if the interest was there?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we're experimenting with some hybrid digital and partly for accessibility as well. With COVID still with us, some folks it's not safe to go to the theater. So just to be able to offer something that is, you know, really beautifully done that you don't need to leave the house. We're exploring one for next season as well. A local playwright has created something that we might do like digital and live hybrid. Just to keep these sort of innovative ways of theater in different spaces going.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So, Krista, the other thing we wanted to mention is that you have a new show coming up in just under a month from now. It is the world premiere of The Flood by Lea Simone Bowen. One of the quotes from Lea is, "Try, listen to the rain, let it clear everything out so you can get back to the beginning. Now, what do you know?" I'm not saying that probably as well as the actors will, but that captivated me. This is a story set back in the end of the 1800s.
1886, and it takes place under the prison. There was a women's prison under the St. Lawrence Market in Toronto. Many people might not know that. And women at the time were thrown in jail for, like, you know, doing something a little bit out of the ordinary because they were having a hot flash or because they were disabled for very, very minimal reasons. Prison became a way to kind of dispose of women. And this play actually looks at that, and it looks at all of the women in and how they kind of are interacting with their past and also with each other within the prison itself.
Okay, so two women.
It's a very beautiful piece.
And
it's five women and one man who plays the guard in many parts. And it's based on some historical, some real people. including a black slave named Sophia Pooley, who was a real slave in Canada who came from the States. Leah wove her into the play, and a Mississauga First Nation woman who was based on some of the first wave of Indigenous children who went to residential school and were stolen from their families. And we have Yvette Nolan, who's an acclaimed director, Indigenous playwright and dramaturg, leading the show, directing it. So it's off to just a beautiful start.
So that's going to be at Centaur Theatre on February 15th to the 25th. Kind of an interesting time of year because Black History Month is in February. Mm-hmm. Montreal has a huge Irish community. And so towards the end of February, mm-hmm. we start looking ahead to St. Patrick's Day and all the activities that happen there. The parade, of course. What I find is a nice compliment is that you're going to be having a lot of guests from a variety of different backgrounds. Depending on what you pull from the play, you might want to choose to go see the shows on one of those evenings, because there's a fascinating conversation afterwards. You've got someone who is an expert in Irish studies at the program at Concordia. There's also Emer O'Toole, who's in Irish studies, as well as Dr. Jane McGaughey. Lawyers, historians. This is a really jam-packed list of commentators.
Yeah, it was incredible the response we got to this piece when Lenny, one of our associate artists, reached out to a long list of folks. The uptake was really quick. They all loved the piece and they wanted to have a conversation about it. So yeah, we have a talk back after each performance, which will be a community conversation with facilitated by myself or one of the team members and this academic expert and then the audience. And it will bring up some of the themes in the piece. One of the characters is Irish, who is an Irish sort of servant at the time that's thrown in jail because she is impregnated by the owner of the house she works for, which is very common. That was her crime, that she got pregnant from that. And then a Ukrainian woman as well. So we have some of the Ukrainian sort of immigration waves that are part of this story. It really is a beautiful intercultural conversation about Canada at that time through the lens of these women. And Leah Simone Bowen has written just like a magical piece, 70 minutes long. And I just heard the read through and wept once again. I wept when I read it the first time at the end and immediately emailed Yvette and said, we have to do this play. And then I had the exact same visceral reaction when I heard the actors read it around the table.
It sounds like for you as AD and executive director, you're going a lot with your gut. You're going a lot with things that are hitting you as well. How important is it for you as kind of overseeing all these busy bees? How important is it for you to kind of be putting on shows that you think your audience is going to respond to, but you too are having a visceral reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I think the beautiful thing about Imago, one of the reasons I'm so excited to be working with the company, is that we can take chances, we can follow our gut. We have a young audience demographic, 20 to 35 is predominant audience age range. And everyone's sort of up for adventure or being challenged and having provocative pieces. And so I feel like we can do that. I can do that. I can respond to things that touch me, but I can also respond to things that sort of disrupt patriarchy and disrupt like even the way stories or plays are often structured. We can take risks and try. And that's like really exciting as an artist to be able to follow and still push, follow your gut, but then push boundaries at the same time.
Absolutely fabulous. You've got a busy couple of weeks ahead. So thanks for making time for Upstage, Krista.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I hope to come back again and wish you all the best in 2024. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year as well, Krista. It's not, we can keep saying it, I think, until maybe end of January. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being on Upstage tonight.
Thanks, Sarah. Take care.
That is Krista Jackson, executive and artistic director of Imago Theater. Just really appreciate the way that she lays out a lot of the programming and what's driving her on a very emotional level about the things that she's picking and undertaking for her company. So that is Imago Theater. You'll want to visit them online, imagotheater.ca, for tickets and more information. We talked about two shows just now, Good Things to Do, which is a virtual show presented by Rumble Theater of Vancouver. January 20th, Saturday shows, they're all sold out. There's only 12 tickets per showing, 45 minutes. All you got to do is be at home with a good internet connection. There's no stopping and starting. So 1 o'clock, 2:45, 6 and 7:45. Tickets are $15 and change for the taxes. And then The Flood, February the, is it 16th? Let me just double check that for you. February 15th until the 25th at Centaur Theater, taking a look at a prison underneath the St. Lawrence Market. I meant to tell Krista that I went to the St. Lawrence Market for a food tour last August. My first, I had no idea this market even existed. And not once during the tour did I, do I recall them mentioning that a prison was underneath. That sounds like a fascinating bit of Canadian history that will be at Centaur next month. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT. We have one more interview for you this evening. We are going to be at Centaur Theater for Wildside's launch. We'll meet a new theater company that is going to do a staged reading, the provocatively titled Plays for the End of the World. Join us to listen to that before the end of the show. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Still a couple minutes here left on our show, and our last interview of the evening will be done by Xander Chung. Xander, you and I hung out on Tuesday night. We went to La Chapelle.
Oh, yeah.
To see Lara Ungian's Leaky Immediations.
That was a fantastic show. I just truly wish that I had stayed behind to see the...
Talk back.
Talk back, yeah.
She's doing one more performance tomorrow night, so you can still head to leschapelle.org if you'd like to check it out. My favorite part, I think, was when she swallowed a lot of water, got on the floor, and then started moving her abdomen around to make the water slosh, but she had a microphone in her hand and she recorded it and then looped it for like a couple minutes. That was fascinating.
Honestly, I'm just a huge fan of just how sound can be modulated. Mm-hmm. So it's that, so just the way that it was recording the music through the stomach or through, you know, the water. I'm not so going to go into details, but yeah. No, there's a lot of play with sound here.
Very cool performance piece and dance at LaChapelle Leakey and Mediation. So you're going to tell us about a reading coming up on Sunday afternoon at Wildside.
Oh, yeah. No, we're totally going to be talking to the amazing Chelsea Dabhilka of Scaredy Cat Theater about their upcoming show for Wildside Fest 2024, Plays for the End of the World. I'm super excited to hear about this one. Chelsea, glad to have you here.
Hello, it's so nice to be here.
Yeah, no, like, the show is going to be hitting the stage January 21st at 3 p.m. How do you feel?
That's correct. I feel super excited. And largely because, though I'm from Montreal, I spent some time away, I haven't actually had one of my shows in Montreal for a long time. So I'm very excited to share some of this work, new work that myself and my company have created with our Montreal community on Sunday.
Well, this is kind of like a homecoming for you, isn't it? For your work.
It kind of feels that way. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned, like, as was mentioned before, this is a new company, Scaredy Cat Theater, which by all means, fantastic name, by the way. I love it. I'm curious, actually, if you can speak to your company's story. How did you come up with the name? You know, the people behind it, the minds, and maybe we can talk about your mandate as well.
Sure. So the three of us met at the National Theatre School while we were students there just a handful of years ago. So we each kind of occupy a main role in the company. I work as the director. We have Cole Haley, who's the playwright, and Anna Morreale, who's performer. And those are like our sort of fixed roles. But when Cole and I were at NTS together, we found that we had a lot of aesthetic interests, and we didn't really get a chance to explore those while at school. So when we graduated, we said, we're going to do it. We'll figure out somehow, somewhere. And we saw a call for a festival in Ottawa called Undercurrents. Cole is, even at his young age, a prolific playwright. So I asked him, what do you got in the bank? And he had some short pieces that he had been developing at NTS. So we had a look at them. We put some of them together and decided to submit to Undercurrents with those plays. But, of course, we needed a title, which I can get to later. But we settled on Plays for the End of the World, and we brought it to Undercurrents. We brought Anna on board as a performer. Anna ended up staying on with us. We invited them in to be part of the company that we now are. Scaredy Cat Theater, the title came about just over the months of kind of discussing what our mandate was, how we felt as performers operating in the industry right now. Everything feels a bit scary, and we kind of recognize that we sometimes enter into projects a little bit afraid, a little bit, you know, dipping our toe in, aware that there might be a failure, there might be a misstep, but something in us drives us to take that risk, to take that leap. And that's where we landed with the name.
Honestly, for Scaredy Cats, I would actually call you fearless. That is an amazing story. And I'm actually really curious to hear about these aesthetics that seem to have correlated between you and your peers as well.
Yeah, so Cole's writing is very architectural in style. He's also a poet, so his script work is also very poetic. Sometimes his characters don't have names. They might just be letters. They might just be dashes. sometimes there's no punctuation. Sometimes the punctuation is seemingly random, but of course we make it make sense. So that kind of architectural style lends itself to a poetic kind of performance style, as well as something that's really rooted in music, musicality, and rhythm. So we're very inspired by some of the absurdist and surreal and gritty playwrights that we've been exposed to, like Samuel Beckett and Sarah Kane, that comes through in our work, I think. And then we're also a very collaborative group. We like to bring in designers early on to help us shape the piece. Sound design has been a huge part of this process from the very beginning. It's informed the work that's emerged. So, that's that.
Sarah Kane, honestly, a playwright after my own heart, really, really brings to light this title, Plays for the End of the World. You know, some listeners would actually kind of consider that a dire title. And we can also look at the image there on the grid as well, which could be considered a dire image, a person with a plastic bag over their head. These are highly evocative of some of the promotional images that I've seen for, say, works of absurdism or theater of cruelty. I'm curious if you can talk about your show in relation to maybe these other traditions.
Oof. I don't know how I feel about being related to theater of cruelty, but I don't think you're wrong. I just don't know how I feel about it. Yeah, it's funny. I keep coming back to that image that Anna took over a year ago now. There's the plastic bag over their head, and we know that that's a fatal kind of position for a human being to be in. But they're still alive in that image, and the human face is kind of like at peace, or there's like a calmness to them. And I'm kind of interested in how we are consistently aware of and living in dire times, as you put it, but there's some kind of like acceptance of it, and it's not a gracious acceptance, but we continue pushing through every single day.
So it, kind of like a complacency almost.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Fascinating. And I would imagine that with these images, right, we're looking into... I find it particularly interesting that we're using a lot of these images and a lot of these dire sentencing, but you very explicitly say that this is not a premonition, which is something that I honestly really appreciate. You know, we often lose ourselves in the spectacle of the end of the world, the thing that is going to be happening later on as a means to kind of depreciate our current struggle right now. What made you decide to take a more immediate approach to the work that you're doing, the aesthetics that you're portraying?
So Cole has kind of described it as not a premonition, but an offering to where we currently are. So just reflective of it's his perspective on where we're currently sitting as a society, as individuals. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question. I apologize, but I'm just going to, for instance, give an example of the way we see these as, or just explain the title for Place for the End of the World. What we feel that we're offering is a glimpse into individual kind of day-to-day experiences of the larger scale issues that are affecting us. So, for instance, one of our characters is a water cooler repair man. And he's been instructed to remove the world's last water cooler because nobody goes to offices anymore. Nobody stands around the water cooler for chit-chat. So this seemingly small task for this inconsequential men is actually reflective of a larger societal issue about isolation and labor issues and loneliness. So that's just an example of the ways that we're trying to explore these massive topics in very specific ways.
And I really admire the idea that you're using, you know, the office space, specifically the water cooler, kind of juxtaposing this really this major issue that we're dealing with something highly mundane, really. Like, it's something that people would casually just, gather around to gossip on a Monday morning. But really, it's implicit in, you know, this thing that we've taken for granted so often.
Yeah, that's Cole's brilliance. So
certainly. You are listening to the voice of Chelsea Dab Hilke, talking about her upcoming show, Plays for the End of the World by Scaredy Cat Theater for the Wildside Fest, which is going to be hitting the stage, a reading, on January 21st at 3 p.m. And did I mention that it's absolutely free? So, one last question, because we're getting to time, I believe. I'm seeing a lot of multidiscipline bending, you know, lots of really interesting mentionings of clowning, poetry, music, performers moving from character to character. Take us through your process. How do you decide to use the various different tools in your creative toolbox?
I really just listen to the plays and see what they're asking for. And we have been working on these plays since Cole and I started on them in October of 2022. So I really have to reflect back on how, you know, they've all undergone a lot of workshopping. But, you know, I'm just going to use the water cooler one again quickly as an example. Cole hands us detailed stage directions about him drinking from the water cooler, how many cups of water he takes. He throws one out, he takes another one. And there was no mention in there of any kind of performance quality, but just in working on it with the actor, you know, what the actor brought to it as well, it just became obvious that it had to be clown, in the same way that one of our other shows, called What You're About to See, one of the other plays, there's three characters, but they don't have a name, and they're always finishing each other's sentences, telling kind of a larger story. And that right away was giving me images of Samuel Beckett's play, the title play. So I really just listened to and looked at what the plays were offering and what the performers were bringing in, and pulled from my training and my history and my research, and allowed the aesthetics and the forms that needed to support those plays to come through, rather than trying to force some kind of tradition on them.
Well, hearing about all of these tools that you're bringing to bear, and, you know, how poignant and how specific a lot of Cole's stage directions are, it really feels like you have some very strong synergy between yourself and your rest of the team, which, you know, that's always, that's how you can really tell that the show is going to be, dare I say, a bop. Chelsea, thank you so much for coming and talking about your show. I really can't wait to sit in on this reading. How about you, Sarah?
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
Right.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here, Chelsea. That was Chelsea Dab Hilke. That was great, Sandra. I like that conversation, the insight that you have into, I guess, the artistic intentions is really interesting. We delved really deeply there with Chelsea. That was fascinating.
Well, I mean, I love just taking apart these, well, not taking apart of these pieces, but, you know, like, writers and directors, they have this massive toolbox that they never really think about. And, you know, having these conversations really brings to light how complicated and how amazing a lot of this work is.
More to come on that, I'm sure, in our future interviews. For tickets and more information, because it is free, but you can reserve RSVP, head over to centaurtheatre.com. Chelsea's performance will be Sunday at 3 p.m. on Chelsea's performance, but the presentation by Scaredy Cat Theatre will be happening there. If you head to Instagram and visit Upstage CKUT, you can see we've linked to Scaredy Cat as well as Centaur if you'd like to learn more online. A very big thank you to our guests tonight, including Chelsea, Krista Jackson of Imago Theatre, as well as Minu, Masha, and Sebastian at Jordy Theater. They will be performing in Jordy Fest next weekend. Thanks to our guests. Thank you to Xander Chung for being here tonight. You can listen back to past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under our archives. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator. I am your host, Sarah DeA. We'll be back next Thursday with more interviews about things going on in the city, including Indigenous Theater Week at La Licorne, as well as more coverage of Centaur's Wildside Festival, which launches tonight. We'll speak with you next week on Upstage. Have fun, stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters with my very good friend Fortner Anderson.
The darling this season in war spending is the hypersonic missile. They are being designed so that artificial intelligence or AI will eventually do most of the thinking to pull the trigger. Diplomacy is not part of the algorithm. It is not programmed in. No one ever factored into the equation what we have now, that one day algorithms would be making the decisions. Algorithms couldn't give a damn about mutual assured destruction or whether the planet is blown up to smithereens. This isn't an arms race, it's a suicide race.
That's Kuhan Pakmander, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Kuhan Pakmander on arms race equals suicide race. The Oppenheimer movie and the Ukraine war have brought much needed attention to the possibility of terminal war. The arms race will end the human race. To call nukes weapons of mass destruction comes nowhere near describing the level of devastation that their use would result in. To be clear, these are weapons of annihilation that would make Hiroshima and Nagasaki look trivial. And how are our great leaders addressing this existential threat? Instead of advocating universal nuclear disarmament, countries, led by the United States, are spending billions to upgrade them. That's a good definition of insanity. It's nothing short of a miracle that nuclear